I'm on the phone with Ronnie Haig. Ronnie, thanks for joining me this evening on my show. I appreciate it.
Hey, Brian, nice talking to you.
Well, Ronnie, tell me about the first memories that you have of music.
I was 6 years old. My brother had purchased a guitar, and he left it leaning in the corner in the bedroom. And I had been watching him as he played. And at 6 years old, I laid it flat on the floor and put one finger on it where I saw him put his finger. And I sang that very popular song, You Are My Sunshine, like every other kid did. And that was my first entrance, I guess you would say, to the music. I later on bought my own guitar, and being raised by a country family, we tuned in every Saturday evening to the Grand Ole Opry. And I used to pick along with them. They didn't know it. And then being raised in church, I sang a lot at church in the choir and took my guitar sometimes and sang gospel music. So that was my very beginning. That was my roots.
And where were you at the time? Where were you born and raised?
Indianapolis, Indiana. Believe it or not, I live one half block from where I was born.
Growing up then in Indianapolis, as you mentioned, was a lot of country music. At some point, not only did you enjoy the music that you were listening to, but you had to decide that you wanted to be a musician.
At 15 years old, I was working at the library downtown as a page. You get to file all the books, you know, and all that. After school, on the corner across the street was this hamburger joint, and everybody'd go over and get a hamburger, you know. So I went over one afternoon and get a hamburger. Somebody dropped a quarter in the slot, and you get six plays back then for a quarter. And on this jukebox came something I had never heard before, as Bill Haley and the Commons. And that bass booming, and this dude liked to turn it up loud too, you know. And I mean, that place was rocking. For the rest of the day, I went back to the library, and I'm up there humming that song, Rock Around the Clock, you know, Birth of the Boogie. They was playing all of them. And I fell in love right then with Bill Haley. I said, that's great. So I went home, and although I loved Eddie Arnold, I liked Red Foley, I loved what I heard on the Grand Ole Opry, and I still do, and I don't apologize for that. I love country music. Rock and roll got a hold of me, and I sat down and wrote a song. It just came to me. Rocking with Rhythm and Blues. And then I wrote Don't You Hear Me Call 'Em Baby that I later recorded. And I did them my way, you know. And I had a buddy of mine, Larry Goshen, that was learning how to play drums. And we'd get together and fool around. And it was just kind of up and down the street. You'd walk up down the street, you'd hear somebody playing some kind of an instrument. You'd go up, hey, my name's Ronnie. What are you doing, man? I'm practicing my sax. Well, that's cool, you know. Living in a hood, I mean, I lived in a neighborhood. And everybody was close by, and sometimes you'd see a guy out on the porch with a guitar, and I'd happen to get there, you know. I guess Bill Haley was the first thing I ever heard. And then, about 16 or 17 years old, I ran across on the radio, WLAC Nashville, Tennessee, Big John R. And this guy, he's a white dude, but I thought he was black all that time. He's playing people that I'd never heard on the regular radio. Like Little Richard and Little Willie John, Bo Diddley, Chuck Berry, Hank Ballard and the Midnighters. He's playing, you know? And I thought, Lord have mercy, where's this music been? Because we didn't hear anything like that in Indianapolis. So in high school, I formed a doo-wop group called the Twiliners. Now, not the ones that became very popular, but we had the name first, I believe. But we broke up when we graduated. We did a lot of those, Why Don't You Write Me, Earth Angel, Good Night, Sweetheart, around campus, and was fortunate enough, believe it or not, to open for the Crew Cuts and the Kirby Stone 4. But that's how, just being there and just doing it. Our motto was just, hey, just do it. Because back then, you didn't have anybody to pattern yourself after. You just had to do what you felt. You take an old song that had been recorded some way or another, and you kicked it up, put a beat to it, and it became rock and roll. And you did it the way you felt it. And nobody could tell you were doing it wrong. Oh, there was a lot of adults that told us we. In fact, they called the cops on us sometimes, you know.
I can't imagine that.
Oh, yes, you can. But I was there at the birth of rock and roll. And I watched people go back and forth across the river at Memphis, Tennessee, the blacks and the whites getting together, and country and blues got together and formed the roots of the music that we all enjoy today. And it was very exciting to live back then. Those that missed that truly missed something in history, because that was the birth of rock and roll. That was the beginning. of doo-wop. That was the beginning of the music that you and I love so much.
What other DJs did you listen to?
Well, locally here, we had a guy that was, I think, twice disc jockey of the year, Bouncin' Bill Baker. When the Beatles came to Indianapolis, they chose him to introduce them. He's just a crazy dude. You know, back then, he had the morning slot every morning, 6 o'clock till noon or something or whatever. And he and I locked up. He was the first guy to put a needle on my record. And we've been friends ever since. I just visited with him the other night. He's a super guy. Bouncin' Bill Baker. There was Bob Braun over in Cincinnati at WLW. And, of course, eventually Dick Clark at that time in Philly. I did his show in April of 58. We would go in, we were on promotion tour, and we would just, for 5 minutes, we'd go in a radio station in Chicago, Cincinnati, Dayton, Detroit, Cleveland, wherever. You got to go meet 4 or 5 disc jockeys. It was just a thing, you know, and I loved it, really. I just always enjoyed bumping shoulders with all the other entertainers, and I'd get so excited. I'd say, my gosh, man, you're my hero. And then they would tell me that they had me pictured to be a great big guy. And I'd say, well, no, I'm sorry, but it's funny how in their part of the world they were listening to my record, and in my part of the world I was listening to theirs. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I recently did a show with the Dell Vikings, the Marcel, the Jaggers, the Vogues, Since I Don't Have You.
Jimmy Beaumont and the Skyliners.
Jimmy Beaumont and the Skyliners, yeah. And I was fortunate enough to be in Pittsburgh and do a show with all those guys. And backstage, it was a riot. We're all back there chasing each other around, cutting up. You know, and here as kids, we had grown up listening to each other. Jody Reynolds, I was just talking to him not too long ago. He lives in California there, and I'm not sure what town, but in a nice condominium. And I talked to him by phone. Super guy. Bobby V, another guy that's still active and busy running around doing shows. Just talked to him the other night. He's doing well. So I've just always enjoyed as much meeting the people, having the best seat in the house, you know, being backstage, and enjoyed playing and singing. Just any show I could grab, just go do it.
You were talking about your guitar a little earlier. What kind of guitar did you have?
Not what I did have. It's what I have.
Oh, excuse me.
No, man. I bought that thing in 56. And I had to have it redone, wore it out. It's a Gibson Gold ES-295. And at the time, the particular one that I got, there was only 50 of them made.
Mm.
There has been a reissue brought out, but that's not the original. And it's like a Les Paul, but it's a full-bodied guitar, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my baby. I think Chuck Berry had one, the Stray Cats, well, that guy.
Brian Setzer?
Yeah, Brian, he had one. Several guys around that, you see them every now and then, but they're kind of rare. I love that guitar. That thing and I have been together a long time, man. Bought it in 56, brand new.
Old friends.
Oh, yeah, I paid $450 for it. Now it's worth $1,000, you know. I don't know how much.
Let's move on then to that first record that you made.
Sure.
What was it like getting into the studio for the first time to cut a record?
It was nuts. I had no idea where I was and what I was doing and who I was with. These guys were all legends. Jimmy Cole on sax, Pookie Johnson on sax, Fox Walker on drums that was Lionel Hampton's drummer, Henry Kane on piano, Will Scott on bass, and the famous Wes Montgomery sat there and played rhythm guitar with me. Had to teach him how to use a pick. He said, no, I refuse. He used his thumb, you know, fastest thumb in the world. And I was the only white guy in the studio.
And which studio would that have been?
We were at Chess Studio, 2120 South Michigan Avenue. It's a museum now. Willie Dixon, famous musician, has turned it into a museum. Anybody can go in there and see it. There's an awful lot of history. You go in like a storefront and go upstairs. The room was about 15 feet wide, about 30 feet long, had a window at one end, elevated. You look up in the control room. They mic'd everything, be it your amplifier or whatever, voice, you know, ran all this ton of cable up through a hole in the wall, into a board. Out of that board came one wire. Remember, this is before stereo. And that one wire went into an Ampex tape deck, and it was mixed as it went down. Jack Sheldon was the engineer. I did 17 songs in that studio with Jack as the engineer and with Jimmy Coe's band. backing up different people, you know, different things.
You did Don't You Hear Me Callin' Baby, your first
one. Don't You Hear Me Callin' Baby was my first one, yeah, backed with Traveler of Love. That was my doo-wop song. It was just amazing. I actually got with the group Five Stars that had Pickin' on the Wrong Chicken and Adam Bomb Baby and different things, and was their guitar player. And they said, we're getting ready to go back to the studio and do our second record, Pickin' on the Wrong Chicken. We want you to be there because you've worked it up with us and you know how we want it. I want you to play on the session. I thought that'd be cool, so I went and met their manager. We played it for them and then had Jimmy Coe's band in this room. They backed it up. It was fantastic. And one of the members of the Five Stars told their manager, that Jerry Herman, that Ronnie has some original songs he's written and maybe he'll do a couple of them for you. And I said, yeah, that's all right. And he said, no, I'd like to hear them. So I, you know, ham that I was, I sang them and the Five Stars started backing me up doing the vocal background, which they did on the record, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So we wound up doing a double session. They did the backup for me, and I played guitar for them on a swap-off. And we became great friends, all of us being from here in Indianapolis, and we did a lot of shows together. It just worked out good, you know.
Well,
being in that studio, though, was amazing because of the history. Now, while we're there, Chuck Berry stopped in to hear the mix on Sweet Little 16 and Reelin' and Rockin'. Got to talk to him. And I hear a lot of people badmouth Chuck and say he's this or he's that. And he was nothing but a gentleman with me that night. We sat down across from each other and picked guitars, and I'll never forget that the rest of my life.
Hmm.
It was 3 o'clock in the morning, man.
Hmm. Let me take a side trip here with
with
the Five Stars.
Yeah.
I have always, for some reason, been intrigued with the Five Stars. There's actually several groups along the way that called themselves that, and it's just now that I am putting it together that the Five Stars with Pickin' on the Wrong Chicken backed with Dreamin' was something that that you worked with.
Right.
And then you mentioned that they were also the group on Colonel with Adam Bomb Baby.
Right, that's them. Yeah, but now they were with Boyd Bennett's band then that did 17.
Right.
You remember that song?
Yeah, 17, and he did My Boy Flat Top.
Now, his club, the Thunderbird, was one block from where I'm living right now. It was another cat named Jerry Siepert that recorded Dirty White Bucks and Tight Peg Pants. Flip side was Never Baby Never.
Mm-hmm.
Same band backed him up. I wrote both songs, and that's my guitar on there. It's like a family, you know what I mean? Note Records, N-O-T-E. And then in 3 weeks, mine was picked up by ABC Paramount. That's where my roots went.
And the Five Stars, then, even though Adam Bomb Baby was on Colonel Records out of Kentucky, mm-hmm. was that group still based in Indianapolis?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, you see, Boyd Bennett arranged for that recording. And then they got acquainted with Jerry Herman and Mel Herman that owned Note Records, and that's where they decided to do their second recording because he had some connections with Chess and ABC and you know, mm-hmm. the national label. They thought that their chances would be better, and they, too, were on American Bandstand.
Did you work then on some of the other Five Stars recordings besides Dreamin'
yeah,
and Pickin'?
I did most of them. I did Friction and My Paradise.
Okay.
And that's my Calypso guitar in there.
Mm.
In fact, you know, there was another group up there, it was the wildest thing, called The Students, Every Day of the Week, and I'm So Young.
Yeah.
And again, now picture this, I'm the only white cat in the studio, and I've always been colorblind myself. I've always picked my friends by who they are and their attitude and how they act. I don't care what color a person is, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sitting in there, and they say, can you give us a kickoff, man? And I said, this is for, you know, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, you know.
Right.
And I said, well, I can come up with something. So I got this lick going, and Press Tyus of the Students, he goes, yeah, man, that's cool. But he said, come on, man. He said, put some nigger in it. I said, what? and then everybody started laughing. Well, I figured, hey, I better laugh or I'm going to get killed, you know. These guys all became good friends, and you play that record, you'll hear that guitar like I put in there, and I guess I had to put a little in there, you know.
Yeah.
But I played on the Students, played on Jerry Sieverts, played on the Five Stars, played on all my stuff. And then Jimmy Coe and I did some instrumentals, one called Shuffle Stroll and the other side called Wazoo. And there were some sessions cut after that that I was not a part of. I think the Five Stars cut one more session that I was not on. And the Students did another session that I was not on. But now, don't get confused. You know, the students that you hear of today, they're doing the students' material, but they're out of Philly.
That's a completely different group, I think.
I'm talking about the original
group. Right.
These guys were from Cincinnati, Ohio.
The students out of Philly, I think, were the ones that did Mommy and Daddy and a couple other things.
That's right. But they still do the other students' material.
Doesn't seem right.
No, I was up in Pittsburgh, and these guys, and I thought, I don't know any of these dudes. Who are they? That's the students. No. But, you know, you're polite to them. But I guess they have some sort of permission to go ahead. Thank God there's only one Ronnie Hagg. I don't think there's anybody out there traveling around.
Well, back to Don't You Hear Me Calling Baby.
Yeah.
As you said, you released it on Note locally there in Indianapolis, and then ABC picked it up.
Yep, they issued it twice.
That's where I was going. Why did they issue it the second time?
You know, it beat the hell out of me. Like I said, I went in the Army in 1961. Now, the first time they issued it was March 15th of 1958. April, I was with Dick Clark, and then we started jumping around the country with guys like Don Gibson and Brenda Lee and, on these little tour things. In 1961, they issued it again. I had no knowledge of it. Ampar just did what they wanted to do, you know, ABC Paramount.
Right.
They did what they wanted to do. It was a family in New York, and they brought it out the second time. It's got a 10,000 number.
Right.
And when I inquired about it, I was told that it was issued for overseas distribution, for international. So I contacted some friends of mine, and sure enough, the record they had a 10,000 number on it. Well, at the time, I was in the military. Of course, I never made a dime off either one of them. You don't make any money making records. Don't want to spoil anybody's thunder, but, you know, you make money on your shows. And if you get a blockbuster hit, you might make a couple of bucks for royalties here and there. But 9 times out of 10 back then, the paperwork was prepared that you're not going to make anything. You're just not going to make anything. Ask Little Richard or any of them. Little Richard will tell you in a heartbeat.
Well, your follow-up, Rockin' with Rhythm and Blues, what was the story behind that one?
That's the kind of music I liked. I really was going to do it slower. Kind of like Money Honey. You remember that?
The Drifters.
Yeah, I had a shuffle beat.
Right.
They didn't want me to do it. They wanted me to keep the 2-in-1 kick, the regular rock and roll beat like Don't You Hear Me Calling Baby, which was cool. Takes a little more air, you know.
Yeah.
But I don't know. The Five Stars were busy. They were out doing another tour, and I was brought back to Chicago and had to do it without them. I missed them. But we just filled it in with guitar licks and sax licks. I understand it's doing pretty well over in Germany right now. I just found out last month or two that Rockin' with Rhythm and Blues, it's been booted on several albums. You know, if your listeners will just take, it probably sounds boastful, I don't mean it that way, but put Ronnie Hagg on your browser, on the computer, you'll bring up all that stuff. There's boots out there all over the world, but that happens. You don't make any money recording. Now, there was a friend of mine named Steve Jancy from Pittsburgh that approached me, and I had a bunch of old records in the can, songs, you know. In other words, they had never been released. He came to me and asked me if I would be interested in him releasing them on Silver Ball label. I said, well, they're all, give me re-record them. He said, oh, no, I want the original stuff. So he made a whole package. Now, let's see, there's Open House Party, Mucho Fine, Go On, Go On, Unforgotten Love, Just One Kiss, that's another doo-wop, Downtown Cruisin', and Pork's Chop Boogie. And he released these things on Silver Ball Records. I'm sure if you put Silver Ball in the browser, they're all over the Internet.
This was the early 90s, was it?
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. Are you familiar with those?
Yes,
Steve's a cool dude. He came to me, straight shooter. He said, Ronnie, here's what I want to do. He paid me up front. There were no quarrels. He's always been straight with me. One of the straightest dudes I ever met. You know what I mean? I admire that. At least he didn't steal them and bootleg them. It just irks me. And if there's any bootleggers listening, I hope they are. I hope all of you get caught. Because there's 1,000 entertainers like myself sitting back, a lot of us with no retirement plan, some of us not able to entertain anymore, would give anything for a nickel or dime royalty. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And no, these people, a lot of it's overseas, a lot of it's here, are bootlegging these guys' songs, including mine, all around the world, and I'll get off of that because it's negative, but it just, I was talking to Dale Hawkins the other day about it, and Bobby V, and several of the older entertainers. It just, it makes you not want to put out a CD anymore.
Well, and it's so easy these days to do
well, yeah,
that.
You can copy anything.
Yeah.
Sure. Somebody's probably copying what me and you were talking about. They're going to release that.
Oh, let's hope not. Tell me about your experiences with Ricky Nelson.
Of course, everybody my age, anyway, grew up watching Ozzy and Harriet on TV. I mean, he was just in front of people. He didn't have a choice. He was there. I heard he was going to be in Indianapolis, and Zach Duncan, who was the entertainment editor in our local newspaper, the Indianapolis Star, contacted him, and I said, "Look, Zach, I want to get in and meet Rick Nelson." And piece of cake. I said, "No, really." He said, "Yes, piece of cake. I'll get you in." "Really?" He said, "Yeah." So I never thought any more about it, and he called me about 3 hours before the show. And I was home, and I think it was about 1964 or 65. They were playing here in town. I followed him through the crowd, and a couple of guys, bless their hearts, said, "Ronnie, are you playing here tonight?" "No, no, no." Made it on backstage. The Hondells were on as the opening act doing First Gear.
Mm-hmm.
All right, you know.
Yeah.
And barnstorming the place, and I go back, and here stands Rick in his red boxer shorts in front of a trunk-like thing. It opens up vertically, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Cup of coffee sitting on top of it, and Zach takes me over and introduces me, and Rick starts to reach over and shake hands with me. He's getting ready to put his pants on, you know, and he's holding his pants in one hand, and he sticks his hand over to shake hands with me and spilled his coffee all down those silver pants. And I felt horrible. I said, "Oh, man." He said, "Well, I'm lucky. I got another pair in here," and he reached in and pulled out another pair just like them, see?
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. We just stood there and chatted backstage about his life in California and how he'd been busy on the road, and he was very interested in my career, asking me had I ever been to California. I said no, except to go to the Army. I mean, I flew out of California to go overseas, but I looked over on the couch, and there was this guitar player over there, had his head down by his guitar, trying to tune it and everything. Wound up being James Burton.
Hmm.
Of course, he's a monster, you know.
Oh, yeah.
My gosh, what a guitar player. And I got to meet him, talk to him a little bit, and he was more like, yeah, it's really nice meeting you, Ronnie, but he was wanting to get that guitar in tune, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And the Hondells finished up, and these guys booked. I mean, they got out of there, and Rick just, he was the last one to leave, to go on stage, let the guys go on out, get plugged in, and he straightened up his shirt, and he turned around one last time. The crowd still, they're going nuts. And Rick took the time to reach around, shake my hand one more time. He said, "I really appreciate you coming backstage, Ronnie." And he said, "It's nice meeting you." Just a real gentleman.
What a great experience.
And I met Elvis the same way. I was stationed in Hawaii for a time there at Scopa Bex. And I was downtown Waikiki. And Elvis had come in to film the movie Girls, Girls, Girls. And we met him. The helicopter brought him in and dropped him off. And there he was without anybody, you know, standing on the grass. And they had not come and got him yet, and my wife and I at the time went up and just hello and chatted just like we were neighbors. I mean, the guy was just as nice as anybody that you could ever want to meet. Very polite. He still had his auburn colored hair. Hadn't dyed it yet, you know. I met him just like Rick. I mean, it was just one of those things that just came up, and I won't forget that either.
Well, you made two records, and you were touring, you were doing lots of different things, but was there a time then that you stopped?
Yep, United States Army. I was drafted. In fact, I had to cancel 6 months' bookings, and they asked me if I wanted to go in special services, you know, entertainment. And I just didn't want to do that. I just didn't feel right, and I didn't want to ride around in a tank all day like Elvis did.
Yeah.
I just didn't want to. So I went ahead and volunteered for the third year and went in RA instead of U.S. and was in for 3 years. So I was in from September of 61 until September of 64. And when I came back home, the Beatles had invaded the United States, and I didn't like them worth a hoot. They just stole our music. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I don't hear Jerry Lee Lewis anymore on the radio. I don't hear Elvis was in the army. Jerry Lee's in jail, wasn't he?
Yeah. I was going to say, that's why you didn't hear him on the radio.
Chuck was in jail. And I'm going, what's going on, man? Little Richard became a preacher. I said, what happened to rock and roll? Now we got these long-haired guys coming over from England. Tell them, stay at home. But I love their music. I mean, you know, I got no kick against those guys. It's just that it felt like they came over and booted us. And since that time, we have continued to be booted, if you know what I mean. Radio stations won't play our stuff. Just a handful. You're a wonderful guy for doing what you're doing. You know that, Brian?
Well, I'm having too much fun to even consider it that way.
You know what I'm talking about. It's just not played. They don't even talk about it anymore. And it's a shame. That's history.
That is history. And if we don't continue to talk about it, we will lose sight of it.
Well, the problem is, we laid the groundwork. So I was never a star. I'm just Ronnie Haig. I'm just a cat that loves rock and roll. And I call myself a foot soldier of rock and roll. Because we all did the same thing. Some of us sold more records than others. But we were just out there doing our thing. And we were able to meet a few people along the way that tickled us to death. And I'm just very grateful for everything that ever happened as far as with the fans and the TV shows and the talk shows and all those things. The fans made that all happen. And the fans today don't exist. It's just not the same. The market is flooded with technology has brought this about. I've got my own studio in my home. There's thousands of other people that do. It don't take anything to put a record out. And the fan base is not what it was back then. There was a lot of mystery. I didn't know what Little Richard looked like until I saw him in person. But I knew his records. You see what I mean?
Yeah. The internet, the media, it's all changed and everything is available in an instant, and it wasn't back then.
And it's cool. I mean, that's all right. I think we should keep focus on who paved the roads. Somebody used the term the other day and told me, said, you know, he dug the well and you drank the water from it. Well, in all due respect, we dug the well. And all these musicians today are the ones that's drinking water from the well that we dug.
Agreed.
Disc jockeys like you, man, you're a rare breed. Find someone that definitely has a love for what we did and is doing it for that. You're to be commended, man. Or to be committed, one of the...
Well, I don't know. I'm going for the latter, dude.
Hey, can I tell you about my two albums that I just put out here not too long ago?
Yeah, go ahead and tell me about your two latest releases.
I got one called Still Kicking Butt, as in your posterior.
That's what I assumed.
It had two T's on it, you know.
Yeah.
Radioactive Gold out of Pittsburgh decided they wanted to put that out. There's 21 of my songs on there. We re-recorded Don't You Hear Me Callin' Baby, only I called it Why Didn't You Hear Me Callin' Baby.
Ah, changed the lyrics a little, did you?
Yeah, not much. The same music, you know. Well, it's new recording, but I mean, we tried to copy it as best we could. My wife, Susie, and her sister, Roxy, put the backup on it.
Wow.
They were my backup singers recently. I had my own band in the 90s and up to the year 2000. And they were doing backup for me then. So I did Still Kickin' Butt on Radioactive Gold label. And they can pick that up at radioactivegold.com. Or they can email me directly. I'll answer every email that comes to me. That's backporchpicker@aol.com. The second one that I brought out, I did these right here in my own studio. It's called Up Close and Personal. There's 22 songs on there. And it's on my label, Gentry. Again, they can just approach me here at the Back Porch Picker. And for anybody that's listening to this radio show, write me. I'll do the albums for you for $10 a piece, and I'll pay the freight as long as it's in this country.
Well, that sounds like a deal.
Is that fair?
That's fair.
There's a lot of music on there, man, and I've got over 500 songs that I've written. I'm very proud of that. God's been good to me. I'd like to share it with people. If you want to hear 50s music like it was done, not some make-believe way, not some modern technology, but if you'd like to hear 50s rock and roll like it was done, well, you ought to write me and get those CDs. I think you'll like them.
You also have a CD that you did called Treasures of Time with some gospel songs.
Yes, I do. Some of them I wrote, some of them I didn't. That's on Gentry, and I'm glad you brought that up. Growing up in the church, gospel music is my strength. It's just a powerful type of music, something that you just gained strength from it. I'm a believer in my Lord, and he's guided me through my life. I felt like I owed him something back, so I put out a gospel album. Good old Southern foot-patting gospel.
Well, Ronnie, tell me what you're doing now.
Well, like I say, I got my studio. I'm still writing songs. I get an idea, and I look over my wife. She'll see me pecking with my fingers or something, or I'll be sitting with a guitar around my neck. And I'll give her that look. She'll say, don't worry about it. Go on upstairs. I'll see you when you get done. Very, very reasonable. In fact, she comes up and helps me, you know, with a little background or picks on the piano a little bit. Like I said, I've written over 500 songs, and they've all just been improv. Just here it comes. Let's go do it. Do it while you got it, because you'll lose it, you know. Recently, a fella got a hold of me. I'm not going to go into names because this is not out for public knowledge yet. But there's a screenplay that's been written, and they're hoping that it will become a movie. And this fella out of the clear blue got a hold of me and wanted to know if I'd help him with the music. And it's about the old doo-wops and rock and roll, you know, back when it started, and how they had a lot of trials and tribulations and different things, and mixed groups like blacks and Italians, and, you know, and how much of a problem it was to just get along. And so he's decided to put this together, and I'm not going to get into it any more than that. But he's asked me to work with him on the music, and I've been struggling with it and coming up with some ideas. But I feel very complimented that he would ask me to do it.
Are you still performing at all?
No. Well, I did a set here a while back, but I have a bone degenerative disease in my back, and it's forced me to give up traveling and that. Would I like to? Is the Pope a Catholic? I mean, that's my blood. That's my roots. And yes, I'd love to, but it's, you know, I've had two operations, and it's just not going to get any better. So I just thank God for what I can do and enjoy what I'm doing, and just talking with cats like you on the phone or fellow entertainers on the email, and that, it's great. Sell a few CDs, you know.
Ronnie, why don't you give out your contact information one more time for the listeners, and that way they know where to get a hold of you.
I'm right here in Indianapolis. You can reach me by email at backporchpicker. You can, in fact, one of my albums has got a picture of me sitting on the back porch picking. backporchpicker@aol.com. And I promise you one thing, I'll answer each and every email. I'm here 24/7, and I'd love to talk to them.
Well, Ronnie, thank you very much for taking time out of your schedule to do the interview with me and to share all your experience with the listeners out here.
I've enjoyed this tremendously. And, Brian, 18 years, I hope you're there another 18, man.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
God bless you. And all your listeners out there, remember the older rock and roll entertainers. Remember the legends. Buy their CDs. Support them. They're the reason. They're the reason that rock and roll was here in the first place. I'm not just talking about me. I'm talking about all of them. Okay?
Okay.
God bless you, Brian.